We're starting at the bottom of Pehe Amabet. We're at the end of this slew of cases that we saw about whether we could take money from when you, this, you know, before. Right, so again, if somebody dies and leaves over, he owes his wife money from the ketubah, and he owes Baalei Chov, and then he has Yorshim. So who has rights to the money? So depends, right? So if the Baal Chov or the woman had taken the money already when he was alive, then they get to keep it. If not, there's a machlok at Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Tarfon says it goes to the koshel, which wasn't clear what that means, the weaker one. Weaker in what sense? They have less proofs. Is it the ketubat isha, according to another opinion, because she's mishum china, so that she can either get remarried or just to give her incentive to get married in the first place, we give her extra rights. All different opinions on how to understand Rabbi Tarfon. But at least according to Rabbi Tarfon, one of them, right, and if one of them, the other thing Rabbi Tarfon said was if one of them grabs it, if it's in the middle of Rashut Arabim, and they grab it before the Yorshim actually put it into their possession, then also they would be able to keep it. Rabbi Akiva says, no way, it goes to the Yorshim because anybody else has to take a Shvuah, and that makes them already more distant from the object. And therefore the Yoresh has first rights. We saw a whole bunch of cases, and we saw that basically there were some people who wanted to paskin like Rabbi Tarfon, but they kind of got knocked down by the other people who always said, no, we don't hold like Rabbi Tarfon, we hold like Rabbi Akiva, and the Yorshim get first rights to it. Now we're going to see another case. Amar le Rava le Bereja Rav Chia Bar Avin. Tashma, sorry, ta ema lecha milta ma'alyuta dehava amar avucha. So he says, tell me something that your father said. Okay, he says to the son of Rav Chia Bar Avin. Ha Amar Shmuel, ha da Amar Shmuel, ha mocher shtar lechaveru v'chazaru machalo machul, v'afilu yoresh mochel. Okay, so now he says, Shmuel says, okay, in other words, he says, I want to know something your father said. So he's going to say, my father commented on this halach of Shmuel. Shmuel says, and today we're going to deal a little bit with this, if you, let's say I have a loan out with someone, and I owe somebody money. Now, that person, the malveh, has a shtar that says I owe him money. Now he can sell that shtar to somebody else. Okay? And then that third person can demand the money from me. So if somebody sells a shtar chov to somebody else, and then the malva said to me, oh, by the way, you don't have to pay me back the money. Okay? He was mochel the chov. So what do you think can happen? So according to Shmuel, it's machul, okay? Va'afilu yoresh mochel. And if the malveh dies and leaves the money to his son, and his son's mochel on it, he technically speaking can do that, okay?
The sale to the other person would have been fraudulent.
So, yeah. Right. So that's the thing. It wasn't because at the time it was a good sale. And at this point, he says, well, sorry, but I'm not interested. You know, I can be mochel and kind of mess you up. So now, we're going to get into this halacha in a little bit more. But right now, let's get to what he's saying. So what Rav Chia Bar Avin says, and as he says in the name of Rav Chia Bar Avin, that Mo de Shmuel b'machneset shtarchov l'ba'ala v'chazra u'machalto she'eino machul mipnei she'yado ki'yada. If a woman brings a shtarchov into the marriage, and then she's mochel on it, that can't work. A woman can never be mochel on a shtar. Why? Because it now belongs to her husband. Her husband has rights to it, right? He doesn't own it 100%, but he has rights to it. This reminded me of something that I looked up once. In the late 1800s in America, women were not allowed to function as lawyers. And there was a whole court case about it to allow women to be lawyers. And they, if I remember correctly, they ruled against the woman who wanted to practice law. And the reason, this I know, I remember, the reason they gave was that she doesn't have right, her husband has rights to cancel her contracts. And therefore, how could she possibly be a lawyer when her husband can cancel any contract she writes? And that was the reason given why women couldn't be lawyers in the late 1800s in America. So it's interesting. So this is the same thing you see here. Basically, she can't do anything independent of her husband because basically he has rights to it just like she does. So she doesn't have the power to be mochel. Okay? Now, there's all different reasons given. Let's just go back to this halacha for a minute about being mochel the chov. We're going to get to, in a few minutes, about, yes, it's true they can be mochel the chov, but does the person who sold the shtar to the other person, the third person, do they have to compensate the person for their loss? In other words, yes, you could cancel the chov, but you still might have to compensate them financially for the loss that you incurred.
It no longer belongs to him because he sold it. How can he has no right to cancel it?
This is the thing. We saw this when a woman sells her ketubah. It's the same thing. In other words, it's still, the loan says that Reuven owes Shimon money, right? It still has Shimon's name on it. So he owns a shtar that says that Reuven owes Shimon money. So if Shimon says, Reuven, you don't owe me money, well then that shtar is meaningless.
So why would anyone ever buy that?
Right.
Why would
you buy
that business? Like,
exactly. Right. So we're going to see in a minute something, or in a few minutes, something they recommend to do if you're going to do that kind of a thing. I'll explain to you in a few minutes when we see it inside why someone would want to do such a thing. So there's a few different reasons given for this. I'm just going to go through one for the halacha. Tosfot says that selling shtarot doesn't work from the Torah, okay? And that's because it only works mikoch takanat chachamim. And that's why really the malve is still the Baal Chov min haTorah. And that's why it works. Now, he claims it's like a Doraita Derabanan. Who really has rights to the shtar? And because from the Torah, he still has rights to the shtar, and only Midrabanan did he sell it, therefore he has rights to do it. That's one way of looking at it. There's a few other ways. I don't want to get into it because it's too complicated, but it's not enough time right now. But if you want to look in the Shantin, they have a few good footnotes that explain it. Okay. So, now we're going to see another case of relatives. Krevte to Rav Nachman, zvinta l'ktubata b'tovat han'am. Okay, here's another case where someone's going to sell. Here they're selling their ktubah. A relative of Rav Nachman sold her ktubah for tovat han'am. What does that mean? If your ktubah is worth 200 zuz, right, plus the tosefet, whatever it's worth, plus the nedunya. Now remember, what happens? In the event that he dies first, then she gets all that money. If she dies first, then the husband inherits her nechsei melug, right? Mm-hmm. And basically, she doesn't get any of the money of the ketubah. So if she sells the ketubah, what is she selling, basically? It's like a gamble for the person who buys it. Maybe the husband will die first or divorce her, or maybe the wife will die first. Now, you also have to remember that women often died in childbirth, so we talked about this the other day, that they generally didn't outlast the husbands. So all the more so, it's not really worth so much. So here he buys it for tovat hana'ah. She's obviously desperate for money. He buys it. Tovat hana'ah, we mean like, maybe he was doing her a favor, he was being nice to her, he saw she needed money, so he gave her some money. But certainly not the worth of what the actual ketubah will be worth in the end if the husband divorces her or dies first. So he buys it for this amount of money. Igarsha, he divorces her, okay? Ushriva, and then she dies. Okay, so now she dies. It goes to the daughter, right? Achu katavele labarta. Okay, now lekucho came and they said, she wants to. One second, let me say it's 100% straight. Right. The people who bought the ketubah off of her came to demand the money from her. In other words, she should get the money from the husband, right? The mother's money, and they want the money from her. Amar lehu Rav Nachman leita de lisbala etza tezel v'tichle l'ktubata de'ima l'gabe avua v'tir tamine. Rav Nachman now says, now remember, this is the relative of Rav Nachman's. He says, is there no one here to give this girl some advice? What should she do? It's obvious. She should go and be mochel on the ketubah, because what did we just say? That even Yorishim can be do it. If she's mochel on the ketubah for her mother, who does the money go to? Her father. If the money goes to her father, then she can be Yorish from her father. Okay? So in the end, that's how she could get the money. So Shama, she heard what he said somehow, right? And he obviously said it, but Lashon Remez, right? Is there no one who can tell this girl this is what she should do? So she hears what he says. Azla achilta. So she goes and she's mocha the money. Amar Rav Nachman. Now Rav Nachman has second thoughts, and he says, "Oy, asinu atzmenu korchei dayanim. We turned ourselves into lawyers. Okay, this is like a good source, negative source about lawyers, right? And he's saying, I'm supposed to be a judge, and look what I did. I acted like a lawyer, where I basically gave, right, I made the claim for her. Now, the Gemara is going to say, Me'ikara my saver, or lovasaf my saver, right? What was he thinking in the beginning when he gave her the etzah? Why was he thinking in the end that he shouldn't? Me'ikara savar u'mipsarcha lo titalem. In the beginning, he said, you know, we shouldn't ditch our relatives, right? If it's our relatives, we should help them. U'lovasof savar adam chashuv shani. In the end, what does he say? I'm an important person. And because I'm an important person, I have to have higher standards. I can't show any partiality to my relatives. So on the one hand, right, he's in this conflict. On the one hand, we're supposed to take care of our relatives. On the other hand, I have to keep to a higher standard and I can't show favoritism. Okay, and this goes back, I wanted to say, this kind of ends this whole slew of these cases. And what we saw in these cases, a whole bunch of situations where there were relatives of people and trying to help them, like Rabbi Yochanan did the same thing, where he wanted to help, but then he said, I can't help. And there's this balance, you know, you can see the struggles that they're having, these people in high positions, and they see halachic solutions to help their relatives, but yet they feel tied that they can't exactly, with full confidence, you know, and a full heart, give this advice to their relatives, because in the end they're really being partial, and they have to hold to this higher standard and teach people how to be. Anyway, it's an interesting struggle that's coming up here. And as I mentioned yesterday, you know, maybe there's some connection to this whole thing about the relationship between spouses and using the situations. I didn't get further in my thinking about it, but it's something to think about. Okay, now we're going to get a little bit more into this case of what Shmuel said. Gufa. Okay, gufa always means we're going to go more in depth into this one statement that the Gemara quoted. Amar Shmuel ha-mocher shtar chov l'chaveru v'chazaru machalo machu. V'afilu yoresh mochel. Right? Even the yoresh can be mochel. So now we're going to see what a possible solution to this is. How to avoid, let's say like this, how to avoid this situation from happening in the first place. If you want to buy a promissory note off of someone, so how can you do it in a better way? I'm Rav Huna Breit Rav Yoshua. V'i pikechu mikarkesh lezuze v'katav leshtara b'shmei. If he's smart about it, what he should do is he should pay. What's he basically doing, right? So let's say it was, right, I said I loaned money off of, from somebody. They now sell the shtar to a third person. So when that person buys the shtar, which is basically going to be between me and him now, mm-hmm. Okay, so he should pay me a little bit of money to basically write the shtar in his name. Okay, now what does this mean, write the shtar in his name? So he should pay me a little bit of money so that to make it incentive for me, right?
To agree to basically
say, now what's this shtar? It's not writing a new shtar. Now why wouldn't we just write a new shtar? And this goes back to the old question, why would you do this in the first place? So think about it, what we've learned. If you have a shtar for a halva'a, right? What do we always learn? There's shibud nechasim, right? What does that mean? The first loan happened in January. And now I come along in June. Okay? If I make a new shtar in June between me and the love, what's going to happen? Right? I'm only going to be able to collect from things he sold from June. But if I take this promissory note from January, and let's say even it's 5 years old, you know, think about how much more land this guy might have sold in those 5 years, I can demand it from that. So he's not going to write a new shtar, but he's going to write a shtar that goes alongside that shtar. And it's basically, some of the Mefarshim explain that basically what the shtar says is, I agree not to be mochel this loan. Okay? You basically get him to sign on that. Okay. Amar Memar, it's not just nowadays that, you know, they say get it in writing. And it's in those days also, you know, the more shtarot you can have, the better off you are in order to prove your case. Just like we saw yesterday with that case where he didn't give the shtar back, you know, and then he was stuck. And you have to be very careful about your dealings with these things because you never know who's going to try to fraud you. Amar Memar. Man didain dina degarme, magbe be dme shtar ma'alya. Okay. We're going to see in a minute here. I'll just read on one more minute. Man de lo dain dina degarme, magbe be dme niara ba'alma. What does this mean? There's some people who don dina degarme, and there's some people who aren't don dina degarme. So they say, I'll explain in a minute what dina degarme is. If you don dina degarme, then the law is like this. You can be govet from shtar ma'alya. If you're not done dina degarme, then you can only be govet a case like this from niar ba'ama. Now, what does this mean? Dina Degarme means, now we're getting to the issue of, if you are mochel the shtar, do you have to compensate, right? If you're the malvin, you sold the shtar to someone else, do you have to compensate the person for what, for their loss? So now it depends. What's this called? Dina Degarme. Garme is grama. It means indirect. You've caused an indirect loss, right? You were mochel the loan. That indirectly caused this guy to lose his money. So there's a machloket about whether we can judge a case like that, whether we can take money from someone for this kind of thing. So if you say that we can take money, then you're... Now here there's a whole machloket. Again, I don't want to get into it. We don't have enough time, but just so you should know. Whole machloket about what it means you're gove shtar ma'alya. Are you gove... Do you have to give the guy the money that he paid for it? The assumption here is that he didn't necessarily... Let's say it was a shtar of 100 shekel. He didn't necessarily pay 100 shekel for that shtar. He could have paid more, he could have paid less. It's not clear, right? So do you have to compensate him for... Probably he paid a little less. That's my sense. So do you have to compensate him for the 100 shekel that he could demand from the original guy? Or do you have to compensate him the amount that he gave you to buy the loan, you know, to buy the shtar? Or maybe even some other amount.
If you compensate him the full amount, then you would never have been sold him.
Right, why would you have sold him in the first place? Yeah. What? If you...
You would never have sold the shtar to anybody.
If what? I didn't follow. If you'd have to compensate him, why would you have sold the shtar? No, you want money right now. It's the malva wants his money. The lova's not paying back the money yet. You have to remember, why would he sell it for less money? He probably will sell it for less money because you never know if the lova's actually going to give you back the money. So it's not worth as much, right? It's almost like you buy something new and then you decide you don't want it. Now, at that point, you can only sell it for less money. No one's going to buy it for the exact price because they'll go and get it from somewhere else. So this guy is hoping, I'll buy it for 80 and hopefully I'll get the 100 back. Right? So now the question is, what do you have to compensate? And what does it mean exactly, shtar ma'alya? There's a bit of a disagreement about it. Anyway, it seems like at least a high amount. If you're not deen dina degarme, then magne be d'mei niyara ba'alma. Now this also isn't clear exactly what that means. So some of the freshmen explain it's the damim for the shtar. It's unclear exactly, but it's obviously you can only take a small amount of compensation back from him. Okay? Hava uvda, there was a case. Bekafi referim l'Rav Ashi, ba'agbe be'ki keshuva l'tzalmi. There was a case that came before Rav Ashi, and referim forced Rav Ashi to dan dina degarme, basically, and to be gove the money like a shura, which is a korah, l'tzalmi, I think it means like an engraved, a beam that you buy to engrave shapes in it. In other words, it's very midukdak. It's very, if it's flat and it's very like perfect. So he's saying he made him demand like every cent back. Okay, he was able to get the money out of. You know, he forced Rav Ashi to force the Baldin to pay back all the money. Amar Amem Mishmei to Rav Chama, Hai Man Diika Alei Ketubat Isha Uba Alchov. Okay, now we're going to go back to our Mishnah. Okay, we're finished with this case of the Mocher Shtar Chov that we got to Derech Agav of all these cases we were bringing and different things. Now we're going to go back to our Mishnah. So now a guy has a Baal Chov and the Ketubat Isha on him. V'it le Ara, v'it le Zuze. Okay? The assumption here is that, I assume we're talking about Yorishim here. Right, I assume... Actually, I wonder if it's... I assume it's just talking about Yerushim here. Yeah. Must be a Yerusha case. Okay. So he has a Baal Chov and he has Ketubat Isha. And he has land and he has money. So, what do we do? La Baal Chov masachina le bezuze. Li Isha masachina la ba'ara. The assumption is the Baal Chov takes the money. Why? Because he borrowed money in the first place, right? Generally, it was a monetary transaction between them. And the woman, we always said that her ketubah is connected to land. Okay? Some of the Mefarshim say here, what's the Chiddush Bechlal? This is so obvious, and why are you even saying it? And there's some back and forth about that, but we'll leave it as a question. Hai kidine v'hai kidine, right? Each one according to how they, right, what their agreement was. V'i lo ike elachad. Ara, what if there's only one piece of land? The lochaz ya ela lochad. Okay, so now who do we give it to? What would you assume? Who are you going to give it to?
Creditor, the guy.
Why?
Because to satisfy the.
But what about the two body shot? Didn't we say before that the woman, right? When we said la koshel, what did we say? We said it's the woman, right? Here we're going to see it's the opposite. Okay, what you're saying is actually what the Gemara says, but I wanted to point out
it's back from Yevamot.
Why?
Because the whole idea that a woman wants to be married, like
right, the same thing about a woman wanting to be married. We're going to see it also more on the daf today. So anyway, what did they say? Okay, so. I'm sorry, I just went to the wrong line. Exactly. So here you have it, that women would rather get married. So even though before, and the Mefreshim tried to say, Tosfot asked this question, why is this different from before where we sided on the Ketubat Isha case? Okay, one explanation they bring is that this is a case where it's already a done deal. Like there we're saying we want to set things that... Oh, right. So in this case, now that I'm thinking about it, this is not a death case, right? Because that's exactly what he says. Right. The truth is we're not talking about a death case. I was wrong. This is just a regular case, and that's the difference that one of the answers to Tosfot brings is that when the guy dies... No, wait a minute. I'm forgetting. 1 second. Right. So the other thing that they're not saying here that Tosfot brings up and some of the other Mefreshim bring up is that the other issue is on with the woman, she'd always rather be married. And when it comes to the Baal Chov, if we don't allow the Baal Chov to get his money back, then what's going to happen? People aren't going to lend money. It's Ni'ilat Delet Bifnei Lovin. Okay, so because of that, we're going to basically, it's going to create problems. Now, Tosfot says here, what's the difference? Right, and by a woman there is no reason. But when it comes to a death case, we say mita lo shchicha. So we're not worried about ni'ilat delet b'fnei alovim in the case that the guy's going to die. And how can you, in other words, when you lend money, you're worried about how am I going to get the money back from the guy himself. You're not worried, how am I going to get back the money in the event that he dies and he leaves your ship. People aren't as worried about that. And you could question that. But women want to know, because women, it's dafka getting the ketubah generally, right? When do you get the ketubah? When the man dies, right? I imagine the death rate was higher than the divorce rate in those days, right? So that it makes more sense. So that's one explanation to
us. This only pertains to a case when they're written on the same day, though, it says.
Only if they're written on the same day.
Because if
then,
the ketubah was written earlier, then she does get the right. She has the right to collect that money. She has the first right to collect.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it says.
Well, she has rights to collect money from land that was earlier, but you think even, yeah, where did... Okay, could be. Could be that's an opinion. I don't know if that's clear-cut, though, across the board, according to everyone. Because it definitely doesn't say that here. So, I mean, I could see logic for it. But anyway. Okay, so there we have our famous line, right? Women always want to get married. Amar le Rav Papa le Rav Chama. Vadai de Amaritu Mishmei de Rava. Is it really true what you said in the name of Rava? That Haiman de Maske Bezuze, someone owes someone money, Vi'i Le Ara, and he has land, Va'ata Baal Chov Katava Mine, and the Baal Chov comes and takes the land, Va'amar Le Zil Shkol Me Ara, that he says, he doesn't take it, he says, I want my money back, and he says, take my land. It's one point that Gemara doesn't say here, which is he doesn't have cash. Okay? He only has land. So now, you have to remember, Rav Papa says to Rav Chama, is it true what you said in the name of Rava that if somebody owes someone money and the guy only has land and he says, take my land, Amrina le, we say to him, Zil zvin at va'aite havle, sell your land and give him cash. That is, you can't pay him in land. You have to sell your land. Amrale, lo emali. No, I didn't say that. Gufa de uvda hechahave. What was the case that you think, based on that I said this in the name of Rava? What was the case? How did it happen? Amarle. He's saying the case that happened that you. Oh, right. He says, what was the case? And Amarle toled ma'utav ba'ovei kochavim hu. Hava. Okay? The case that happened where you saw Rava do this was a case where he said, I don't have money, as he really did have money, but he said, but this money is in the money that I have is in the hands of an Obey Kochavim and I can't get it from him, right? Always the perception was the Obey Kochavim are dangerous and we don't want to mess with them. So he has my money and I can't access my money. And but really he was lying. Okay? So what happened? Hu asa shelo kahogen, lefichach asu bo shelo kahogen. In other words, he's saying the reason in that case that they forced the guy to sell the land was because he was lying. And because he was lying, we basically, we basically forced him to sell the land. But in a regular case, Rava wouldn't necessarily do that. What I wanted to just point out here, it was actually interesting, in the Gemara Chugah for girls last night, they were asking me, we were talking about different things, about lying, and anyway, they said, you know, well, couldn't anyone just lie in court, you know, and couldn't anyone just, and I was thinking, exactly all these things we're talking about, it's just all about people abusing the system. Yesterday we had the woman who was known to be a liar, and here we have this guy who lied about the money, you know, and you see that it's very difficult to have a system when people are abusing the system, you know, and it clearly happened often that people weren't being straight and honest about things, or, you know, or you have judges who are being partial and trying to help their relatives, and, you know, it's a tricky business. So anyway, it does, unfortunately, it did happen a lot, and it, right, and it still does. Amar le Rav Kahana le Rav Papa. L'didach ta'amar kriyat bal chov mitzvah. Amar lo nicha l'di'avid mitzvah mai. Here's a very strange question. He says, according to you who says that a priat balchov is a mitzvah, paying back a loan is just a mitzvah. Like, you're not over on a lotase if you do this. It's just a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to repay your loan. Now, the Mefarshim all say, like, what's the mitzvah here? And what's the issue? There's all different, you know, perceptions about what does it mean that it's a mitzvah. Some people say it comes from v'hin tzedek yelechem. Okay? That you have to do what's right and just, right? That, and therefore you have to pay back loans. You have to keep to your word if you say I'll do something. But what they're trying to say is there's no real way from the Torah that we can force someone to give a loan, according to this. And if it's just a mitzvah, so the question is, what if he says, well, I'm not interested in doing a mitzvah, right? If someone says they're not interested in doing a mitzvah, what power does the Beit Din have to force it? Now, we're going to see, they're going to compare this to if someone says, I won't build a sukkah. Now, if someone doesn't build a sukkah, so there's obviously a difference between that and someone saying, I'm not paying back a loan, because a sukkah only affects him, whereas paying back a loan affects somebody else. But what's interesting here is they're going to equate them, but you'll see why, because in the end they side saying that we can force people to do mitzvah, even building a sukkah, okay? So now they say, Amarle Tanina, okay? There's a braita that says like this, Bamedvar Mamarim, okay, now this braita is talking about that your loket arba'im. Okay, when you get malkot, you can't give someone more than 40 malkot. That's the maximum. Really, it's 39. We give them 40 minus 1. Give them 39 malkot. What case do we give people malkot? Only 40 and not anymore. B'mitzvot lo tase. Okay, you ready for this? You're going to be a little surprised. Aval b'mitzvot ase, kigon she'omrim lo, ase sukkah ve'eno oseh, lulav ve'eno oseh, makin oto ad she'tetzeh nafsho. If someone does, if you say to someone, build a sukkah and he doesn't, take a lulav and he doesn't, you're allowed to give him malkot forever. You can give him as many malkot until he finally agrees to do it. Basically, as you say, I'm going to whip you into shape, okay? If someone doesn't agree to do a mitzvah aseh, you can basically whip him into shape until he agrees to do it. Now, what's the difference between a lo taseh and an aseh? A lo taseh is done already. In Aseh, he hasn't yet done it, right? And so you can basically, some of the Mefarshim say here, it doesn't necessarily apply only to Mitzvot Aseh. It could apply to a Lo Taseh that he's about to do. If you see someone about to do a Lo Taseh, and you can stop him by basically whipping him until he agrees to not do it. So there they equate a Lo Taseh that hasn't yet been done with a Mitzvot Aseh, because they're basically in the same category for that. So in the end, they say that basically, if someone doesn't pay a loan, you can whip him until he agrees. Interesting. Interesting perspective on mitzvot aseh, right? Who would think that you could force someone to build a sukkah, right? And I mean, the question is, why are we in a situation where even omrim lo, right? Why would there be a situation where someone say you have to build a sukkah, right? It's strange. People don't often get involved in people's lives, right, when it doesn't affect other people. And then you would just say, obviously, all the more so, if you could do it in that case, you can obviously do it when there's somebody else involved.
Maybe if he doesn't build a sukkah, his wife wants to build a sukkah.
Maybe if it's a family thing.
Yeah, well, like, I guess a woman doesn't have to.
Right, or for the children. Not for the women, right. Yeah, for the children.
Women, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. And he doesn't build a sukkah for
but
his
lulav, boys. But a lulav is just for him. Or he doesn't buy them, you're
he
saying?
He doesn't buy them. I'm saying he has bar mitzvah age boys who have to eat the sukkah and do the lulav.
Right.
And he doesn't.
Right.
He deprives them of that.
It could be. It could be in that situation they would come in. But
Because it affects someone else.
It could be also the reality was different then. It could be they did force people to do those kind of things. I don't know. Anyway. Ba'amine Rabbi Barchama Mirav Chista. Okay, Rabbi Barchama asked Rav Chista. Hare Zegitech. Okay, now we're going back to, remember we had this issue of something sitting in Rashid Arabim and it basically has no owners at that point? So, we're going to talk about that issue of no ownership. Hare Zegitech. Okay, someone gives someone a get and says, this will be your get. Velotit Garshi. This is your get. But don't use it, basically. It's only takef, it's only valid in another 30 days. And she leaves it in Sidei Rishud Harabim, and when the 30 days come, it's sitting with Sidei Rishud Harabim. We'll get into in a second what Sidei Rishud Harabim are. Okay, what's the halacha? Okay, the assumption here is that Sidei Rishud Harabim is like Rishud Harabim, basically. Amar le, ena migureshet, midirabu Shmuel. She's not migureshet. Why? Because Rav and Shmuel, damar trabayim. Vehu shetzvurim munachim b'rishud harabim. But today rishud harabim, k'rishud harabim damu, right? Someone could be tofes in the chasim if they're in rishud harabim. Because it's no man's land, basically. So her having this get, the get has to be in her possession. It's not in her possession if she leaves it in the middle of rishud harabim. Now, what's today rishud harabim? Remember what the cardo looks like?
Yeah.
It's got like the two main, right? There's like a big alleyway. And then there's areas, literally, I'm not sure if the cart is exactly set up like this, but there's areas a little bit off to the side, like in front of each store. There's like, it's a little bit more of like a private area, but it's still public, okay?
Yeah.
Like whereas, you know, maybe there's like beams and then behind the beams.
Okay.
It's Tzidei Rishud Harabim, okay? That's what I was thinking of the cardo with like the pillars. So it's kind of off to the side, but it's not exactly off to the side. So still a lot of people go through there, but you think about it, it's not the place where all the passerbyers are going. So right now the Gemara is assuming it's like Rishud Harabim. So now the Gemara says, now Adrabah, Megureshet, Midrav Nachman, we learn it from Rav Nachman, Dam Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Ravua, Haomer Lechavero, Meshoch Parazo, Velo Tiek Nuya Lecha Ad Lachar Shloshim Yom, Kana Vafilu Omedet Ba'agam. My love, Hainu Agam, Hainu Tzidei Rishud Harabim. In other words, they're saying, here we have this case. Somebody says, take this para, the exact same thing, right? It won't be yours until after 30 days. In 30 days, right, it becomes his, even if it's out in the middle of a lake. Okay? So now, wouldn't you assume the middle of a lake is like Tzidei Rishud Harabim? It's a public space. So they say, lo, Agam Lechud, Tzidei Rishud Harabim Lechud. Now, you can't compare. Agam is different, okay? And Agam is more private than Sidei Rishud Harabim. That's what the Gemara is saying right now. Now, they're going to learn this whole sugya. They're going to say, oh, you misunderstood the way it was transcribed. You know, it was wrong. This is the way it really happened. Ika de Amre. Okay, we're going to go the flip. Amre le migureshet, midrav Nachman. Okay, there we started out. We said, ena migureshet, right? Because it's public, okay? Whereas the Agam is private. Now, we're going to say, no, she is migureshet. How do you know that? Midrav Nachman. V'tzidei Rishud Harabim ke'agam dami. We dafka learn it from the halacha of Rav Nachman, because Tzidei Rishud Harabim we say is like an agam. They're both not as public as the real Rishud Harabim. And then the Gemara says, no, adraba, ena megureshet, midirabu Shmuel. My love, hainu Rishud Harabim, hainu Tzidei Rishud Harabim. Wait a minute, if you're going to learn it from Rav Nachman, and we're going to say that Tzidei Rishud Harabim, right, is like an agam, they say, wait a minute, but isn't Tzidei Rishud Harabim like Rishud Harabim? In which case we should say she's not Megureshet, like Rav and Shmuel say. Then they say, lo, Rishud Harabim Lechud, v'Tzidei Rishud Harabim Lechud. Okay, no, you can say that Tzidei Rishud Harabim is like an Agam, and it's not like Rishud Harabim. Okay, so basically, according to the Sugya, we come to the two readings, it's total opposite conclusion. What, according to one, Tzidei Rishud Harabim is like Rishud Harabim, and she would not be Megureshet. According to the other opinion, Tzidei Rishud Harabim is like an Agam.
Why is this the placement of the get?
Because the question is she owning that? Can she own something? If you leave something in Rishud Harabim,
but it's not.
Because the point is the kinyan is takef at the moment that it. At the moment that he. Let's say he gave it to her, she accepted it, but he says it's only good in 30 days. So at the 30th day, when it's supposed to be hers, she has to do some sort of kinyan on it. And it's just. In the middle of the street.
So it's basically a distinction between Rishud Harabim and Tzidei Rishud.
Right. So the whole question is, since Tzidei Rishud Harabim is in between.
It's still not in her
Right. It's still not. So the question, right. So it's...
The question is it the public domain or is it the side of the public domain? Is that where she knows where it is? Is it...
Right. Can we say that she put it there...
For safekeeping.
Right. Exactly. She thought that was safe enough and it's sort of, you know, it's sort of... It's like, because, right, the question is really when the actual kenyan has to take place. Does the actual kenyan have to take place after the 30 days, or was it enough that she took it, but, right, and she did the kenyan at the moment, right? Let me see, just this parah case, right? He says, Meshoch parazeh. So he was Meshoch the parah at that point, but it's only going to be his in 30 days. So when the 30 days happens, you might take something, but if there's no validity to the kenyan at that point, and in the 30 days you've left it out in a public space...
It's not yours.
Right, it could be we look at it as the kenyan wasn't really fulfilled yet, right? It wasn't... So it's like this in-between, where the kenyan sort of happened, but sort of doesn't happen. That's, I think, the way you have to look at it. Okay, new Mishnah. Hamoshivet ishto chenvanit. He puts his wife in charge of his store. O shemina apotropia, okay, or... He appointed her in charge of his money. Okay, here's a really interesting relationship between husband and wife. If he basically puts her in charge of his money, he's allowed to make her swear anytime he wants. He can basically say, like, at the end of every day, I want you to swear to me that this is all the money that came in today and that you didn't pocket anything. Okay, right? They have a real good trusting relationship between husband and wife. Okay, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, afilu al pilcha va'al isata. Even the things she does in the house, right? Even if he doesn't, now the assumption here is that Rabbi Eliezer thinks even if she's not an apitropia, right? He doesn't put her in charge of things, but just the general things that the woman's supposed to do in the house, right? She does the pelech, she does the food. We saw this, right? All the things that a woman's chayav to do to her husband. He can make her swear every day that she didn't pocket anything, that she didn't, right? Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Okay, so now they want to understand Rabbi Eliezer because they think Rabbi Eliezer is a little crazy. Like, what kind of a relationship, trusting relationship, are you going to create between husband and wife if he makes her swear about everything, right? It's going to be unreasonable for her to live there. We're going to see this in a minute. Ibayalehu, Rabbi Eliezer, al yidei gilgul kamar o lechatchila kamar. Okay, first you have to know what a gilgul shvua is. A gilgul shvua, in general, we don't allow people just to take shvuot. Okay, it's not a good thing that we're going to see also down the road that... I think it's already coming up very soon, that we don't want people to swear because we're worried people are going to swear falsely. And swearing falsely is a very serious avera, worse than like a neder or something. Okay? A shvua, swearing falsely, generally it was done b'shem Hashem, and it's very serious. So, lo tishavu b'shmi l'shaker, it says in the Torah, so we don't want people to swear falsely. So generally we avoid shvuot if we can. But there's certain situations, you know, we allow them. So Gilgul Shvua is, if someone's taking a Shvua about a particular thing, can we just add something on? Once they're already swearing, can we just add on something that, you know, we're a little bit doubtful about? It's not really something we've been mechayev Shvua in a regular case, but we're going to allow them since they're already doing the Shvua anyway. Now, do you want to avoid Shvua? Once they're already swearing, so they're already swearing, we'll just add on. Oh, by the way, don't just swear about number one, but swear about number two and number three also. Okay, and then it's assuming number one was the thing they were mechayev shvua for. So here is Rabbi Eliezer saying, if she's the chenvanit and the apitropia, and he's making her swear at the end of the day about what happened in the store or what happened with his money, can he also add on? Oh, and by the way, just while you're swearing, swear about the pelech or the isa. Okay, oh lechatchila kamar, or does he think that at the end of any given day, even if she's not the apitropia or chenvanit, he's allowed to say, swear to me about the dough that you didn't take any or eat any or whatever it might be. So Tashma, they say, we're going to learn from here what the answer is, that it must be El Yidei Gilgul, because why? Amrulo le Rabbi Eliezer, oh sorry, it's the opposite. I was remembering the conclusion, but Amrulo le Rabbi Eliezer, what do they say to him? Ein adam darim nachash b'kfifa. We've seen this a lot, right? No one's going to live with someone who makes them swear every day about their isa. That was the reaction. This is a bright side where that's the reaction they had to Rabbi Eliezer. So what do you think that means? That Rabbi Eliezer must have said that lechatchila, right? That he can make her swear about the Isa. And they said, what are you, crazy? How can you make her swear every night about the Isa? That's nuts. She's never going to live with this guy. If you say that he says it lechatchila, that without having no gilgul shvuah, right, no matter what, he can make her swear about these things, then it makes sense that that was their reaction. In other words, if it's al yidei gilgul, he's not making her take any more shvuah than she was taking anyway, because she, if she's not, the chachamim agree that if she's not betropia, he's allowed to make her swear. So if he's just saying it's al yidei gilgul, then he's not making her swear any more than necessary. So why would you call that anadam dar benachash bikfifa achat bikfifa? Sorry. So they say no. It could still be de amrele kevan de kadayakta batray kulehai lo matzina de ador bahadach. Even al yidei gilgul shvua, she could say, I understand you want me to swear for the business, but to make me swear that I didn't take, you know, the dough, or I didn't take from the pelech, like, I can't live with you if you're going to make me do that. In other words, it's not that he's making her take extra shvuah. It's true she's swearing anyway, but you could still explain it. The Rebbe Lezer holds it's only gilgul shvuah, and she's just saying, I can't believe you're making me swear about that kind of thing, okay? So here you see, right, even though the Mishnah seemed a little crazy, you see that they're relating to the fact that how could somebody make their wife, you know, what kind of a relationship is that, and how can we expect her to live in such a relationship? So now we still don't know. In other words, we've left open both options about Rabbi Eliezer. So now they're going to bring another source. Tashma, Hare shalo patarit ishto min haneder min hashvua, vo shivat chemvanit o shemin apitropia, hare ze mashbi'al kozman sheyirtze. Okay, if, here's a braita that says, if he didn't excuse his wife from making nedarim and shvuot, in other words, he didn't say, you're patur from making nedarim and shvuot, and he made her a chemvanit, or an apitropia, he's allowed to make her swear anytime he wants. Lo ho shiva chemvanit, v'lo min apitropia, but if he didn't make her into a chemvanit or an apitropia, eino yachol lahashpia. Okay, that's Tanakam. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, afopi, here we see it explicitly now, what he holds. Here's a more elaborate version of him, and that's going to prove what he holds. Okay, here you have it. He says it's not gilgul shvua. He's allowed to make her swear on anything. Why? What's his reasoning? In other words, the role of a woman, almost, he's saying, is that she's responsible for her husband's money. And therefore, that makes her in apitropia. She has rights to his money.
In the marriage, that she said, like, at some point in the marriage, she has been his administrator.
Right. I think what it really means is that she controls his money. This goes back to the Mishnah in bed about Isha Sheyotzah Shelo B'Ketubah. If she doesn't take the Maaser and she doesn't do this, in other words, the whole point is that the husband has no choice but to leave her. He can't watch her day and night. And Rabbi Lezer is kind of siding on the man's side and saying he can't watch her like a hawk. He can't have spies spying on her. So what's his only choice? To make her swear here and there that she's not abusing, you know, his money. So Amrulo, but Chachamim said to him, okay, this just makes us feel better because Chachamim don't accept this in any way, shape, or form. They say, Ein adam darim nachash b'kfifa. Right? It could be, I don't know, you have to think about what kind of a relationship Rabbi Lezer had with his wife. That's what motivated him to have this lack of trust. Okay, shmamina lechatchila shmamina. It must be that Rabbi Lezer says it's lechatchila, but in the end, what do we hold basically? That she doesn't have to swear. Okay, she, you know, he can't make her swear on all those things, but he can if he puts her in charge of the house. He can make her swear on that.
But it's not just assumed that he can make her swear just because she's his wife.
Rabbi Lezer holds that way, but Chachamim disagree, okay. And we hold like Chachamim.
She really has to be in charge of his...
It's only if he makes her technically in charge of his store, his money, you know, as an apitropia, then he can. Okay, let's do a little bit of the Mishnah, we'll see how far we get, and then we'll stop here. Katav la neder ushvua ein li'alayich, ein yachol lahashpia. Okay, what if he says, I'm not going to have any nedarim or shvuot on you, meaning I'm not going to force you to take nedarim, so you can't make her swear. Aval mashbiahu et yorsheha ve'et haba'im birshuta. This sounds a lot like, who remembers when David HaMelech dies and he had promised he wouldn't take care of Shimi ben Gera, right? He wouldn't like do anything to him, and then Sheva ben Bichri or Shimi ben Gera, I forget, I confused the two of them. Anyway, his last parting words to Shlomo are, I said I wouldn't take care of him, but you know, you can. Okay, so if you say, I will have no nedarim u'shvuot on you, He can't make her take a shvua, but he can make that I won't have any dinarim shvua on you, but I can have on your yoshim or ba'im birshuta, or somebody who's taking, you know, responsibility for her stuff, he can make them swear. What if he says, this is like a very similar structure to the other Mishnah, right? These are all different wordings. So let's see the wording. Nedir shvua eni alaych va'al yorshayach va'ala ba'im birshutech. So then, eino yachol lashpia lohi v'lo yorshe v'lo atabayim v'rshuta. Okay, then he can't make any of them take a shvua because he's explicitly said, I'm not going to. Aval yorshav mashpiyin ota, but his yorshim are allowed to be mashpia ota, bet yorshav atabayim v'rshuta. But he only said, I won't have a shvua. He never said, me and my yorshim won't have. Nedir shvua eni v'lo yorshay v'lo lebaim v'rshuti. Okay, he says all the nuschaot. Yeah. Nobody can. Okay? Halcha mikever ba'ala lebeit avia, o shechazra lebeit chamia v'lo naaseit apitropia. Okay, let's say she goes straight from, her husband dies, she goes straight from the kever back to her parents' house. Or she goes back to the Beit Chamiya, but didn't take responsibility, lo naaseit apitropia, for his nechasim. Ein ha-yorshim mashpi'in ota. Okay, since she's not functioning as an apitropia, they can't make her swear about the nechasim. Ve'im naaseit apitropia, but if she becomes like a, you know, in charge of the money of her husband, ha-yorshim mashpi'in ota al ha'atid lavo, ve'im mashpi'in ota al ma'ashavar. So if she, what's interesting about the second part of the Mishnah is, she now moves into a different position. So even though he said, me and my Yorshim will never make you swear, that was in your current function. But if she takes on a new function as being in charge of his money, then it's a new function and they're allowed to make her swear from then on, but not on what happened before. That's his
perhaps
statement only had a certain validity only as such that she stays in the same position of being in charge of whatever she was in charge of and doesn't take on responsibility as apitropia for his money. Once she moves into a new role, from that point on, they can make her swear about things. But they can't make her swear backwards because backwards she wasn't in apitropia and she was in the same position as
before. But what legal standing do they have to make her swear for anything? They're just as heirs. I mean, they can make her swear not as the husband.
So yeah, because the money is theirs now, but she's functioning in a role of being in charge of it. I mean, we'll see as we get into the Gemara, you know, how they take this. Okay.